We've measured hostility in four different categories. That is to say, hostility toward the self or toward one's own country. Secondarily, hostility which seems to be undirected, so which we've titled laissez-faire, that is to say, do nothing about it. That always happens. There's nothing you can do about that situation. Verbal hostility towards other people, swearing, calling them names, other forms of vilification, and direct hostility towards other people, sending troops to the country, kicking them, hitting them, slamming doors in their faces, and so forth. And we've studied these four types of hostility in three different fields of behavior. In the field of everyday experiences, when you come into the room one night, you stub your foot on a bedpost, what would you do in this instance? In the field of educational experiences, both from the student's point of view and from the teacher's, a student in your class throws an orange at you and you come into the classroom, what would you feel like doing? Or from the student's point of view, you find that one of the people sitting alongside of you is copying from you during a test, what would you feel like doing? And thirdly, we have the two from everyday educational or professional, and the thirdly, international situations. An American is killed in a Panamanian riot, or the Russians refuse to return a prisoner of war, American prisoner of war. What would you feel like doing? Now, this hostility measures four different categories of hostility and three fields of social behavior. And what do we find? Well, we find that the categories of hostility are very different from each other. In the analysis of variance, those of you who want it straight, they differ very significantly from each other. But the fields, the three fields of educational experience, everyday experience, international experience, do not at all differ significantly from each other. So that again, this reinforces my assumption that I was writing on, that international relations seem to be one extension of human relations. So we have the hostility inventory for measuring problems in hostility, in hostile development and tensions. We have another study called Study in Judgment. This study is an attempt to measure on a ratio basis instead of a rank basis. A lot of criticism has been leveled recently at rank order studies. This is a ratio study. It's an attempt to measure the variables that make up this word, quote, understanding, unquote. And preliminarily, we can say this very easily, that one of the variables that seems to be related to understanding, and very highly negative related to it, is difference. There seems to be a definite feeling among subjects studied that if an individual is different, he is hard to understand. Now, that seems, well, you can say, well, we could tell that just by sitting back and writing about it. I grant you could. But it's quite interesting because how many of our programs are stressed at talking about how different the Chinese are, and ooh, look, there goes an Indian student, and so forth, and so on. So that we have this problem of the study of judgments of nations and the relationship between different variables which affect understanding. A third instrument that we're using and working on very strongly right now are categories for the analysis of content of written materials, written and spoken materials. That is to say, what we are attempting to do is to cover the fields, just a few of them here, of sociology, semantics, linguistics, clinical psychology, social psychology, and group dynamics for the study of categories they use to study human verbal behavior. And from that, what we hope to do is to find out what categories can we use to measure statements, speeches made by national spokesmen, or, if you will, committee meetings that are being held at this present time all over the world. Moreover, in this field of categories, we run time and time again into the sad experience that most of our social scientists' categories of study of human responses are intentional rather than extensional. That is to say, they say that Mr. X showed tension release, or Mr. X indicated introversion, that he was introverted. And of course, these are intentional meanings. They're reading into Mr. X's behavior. and we have to skirt around those categories and actually find out what do you do when you release tension. And that isn't so easy to answer. So much for these three instruments. The fourth instrument is one that I have on the board in front of you, and I feel somewhat like we have a joke around the house that there's only one thing worse than hearing a tap dancer on the radio, and that's to hear a fellow doing card tricks. So that I hope that you'll excuse me when I try to explain these models I have in front of me, both to the audience seated here and to the radio audience, should there be one. What we have done is to take 10 cultures of the world, Anglo-American, Indian, Southeast Asian, that's the second. The third one is Semitic, and Arabic, so forth. Latin American, Latin European, Negro African, Germanic Scandinavian, Chinese Japanese, Slavic, and an imaginary culture, making 10 cultures altogether. We've taken those 10 cultures and introduced them in a written test and asked students to choose the one they like best out of three. In other words, we would give them three choices. We'd give them one choice from the Anglo-American, let's say, one from the Semitic, and one from the Latin European. And I asked them to rank the country that they like best first, and then the country they like last third. In other words, we would get a rank order of 1, 2, 3 on these countries. Well, by presenting a sufficient number of these particular questions to about 130 students on this campus, we were then able to analyze their data, throw out those items which did not discriminate, and finally score the test on the best items, which amounted to approximately 27 different items. Now, on the basis of those 27 different items, we were able to get scores for this total population of 130 people to see how they perceived, how they looked at this international world, what the international world looked like to them. This was done by plotting correlations, and after that, the intercorrelations among each of these 10 major cultures of the world. And what did we find then? Well, we found that the intercorrelations were low. It looked as if we weren't going to get very much out of the experiment, which is a normal problem, as most of you realize. Then we applied two statistical techniques. One, factor analysis, the model I have here in my right hand, and another, a new method of analysis of correlations, intercorrelations, developed by Dr. Osgood in our department. I'd like to start with Osgood's model because it is by the far less confusing, and though it may be confusing at the beginning. I have here a model which in which I have a rubber ball. The rubber ball, the brown rubber ball, represents the origin in a sphere. That is to say, the central point of a sphere. And each of the other rubber balls, each of the other 10, represents a particular point on the inside of that sphere. That's why all our poles are the same length. Now, what I would like to demonstrate to you is the relationships among each of these points and how they differ from a number of the things that are going on in our world today that we might not have got at without at least one research problem being done. At the bottom here, I hold the pole which represents A, the Anglo-American culture. Now we ask ourselves, with what cultures is this pole related? And we find it's related to G, Germanic Nordic, and to I, the G, the Germanic Nordic, and to J, the imaginary. These three cultures form as much of a cluster as you would get using this particular method of statistical analysis. Opposed to these cultures, that is to say, in another continuum, we find a few of these more interesting cultures from Asia. We find the Hindic culture, we find the Semitic culture, the Sinic culture, African culture, and Latin America. And very close to our three basic cultures, Germanic, Anglo-Saxon, and imaginary, we find our Slavic culture and our Latin European culture. Now, what you do find here very interestingly is that the world, as it's divided in the minds of these 130 college students, is first of all what we call multi-ordinal. In other words, there does not seem to be any major cluster in this particular pattern. However, so the world exists in 10 separate entities as it was presented on the test. They don't cluster too closely together. When we begin to make cultures and clusters of cultures, we find that we get a very interesting pattern of relationship among the cultures of Eastern Europe, Western Europe, and the United States, as opposed to Asia, the Semitic cultures, and the Hindi, or Indian culture, and including the African culture in that. In other words, the polar feeling of East-West division includes the Slavic culture with our own, rather than with the Asian cultures. Furthermore, when we look at it, when we cut it down the middle this way, as that I'm holding it, you find a beautiful division in terms of race. You find Latin America, Semitic, Hindic, Chinese, and Negro African bunched together as differing in racial background from the rest of the world. That's quite interesting. Furthermore, when you look at this particular sphere and try to travel around the world from it, you start from an Anglo-Saxon Germanic imaginary culture base, move over to Latin Europe, move on up to Latin America and Africa, into this tremendous complex world of East Asia and the Semitic lands, through Russia and back to the Anglo-Saxon world. So that you actually have four major clusters here. We find that the greatest polarity, the cultures most opposed to the Soviet culture, for instance, are the Latin European cultures and this imaginary culture whose line may extend in either direction. What does this picture tell us? Well, this picture gives us a pretty good idea of some of the relationships that exist that are perceived by students studied on this particular campus. This particular study would be used as a measuring instrument, let's say, before and after a program on international understanding to see what shifts in attitudes might have taken place. The factor analysis, which was done, is just another form of statistical treatment of intercorrelations. And you find the same pictures developing only in terms of different planes, which factor analysis is able to bring out very clearly. For instance, you find polar to each other, Africa and the Soviet Union here as being polar to the American Anglo-Saxon culture to some extent. And in the same plane, you find these four cultures, America, Latin Europe, Latin America, and Africa. Furthermore, certainly more distinct than is the Soviet Union and Africa from our own United States are the cultures of the Hindic, Southeast Asian cultures, and even further away, the Chinese-Japanese culture. That seems to indicate again that perhaps the problem of international understanding is not simply one of East-West relationships when Soviet Union is perceived as East and the United States as the West, but perhaps the real East-West is Asia and the world of Anglo-American and European-American. Well, this particular study then raises a lot of problems about hostility, raises a lot of problems about imagination in world affairs, autism as we call it, fantasy thinking, and raises problems about cultural pluralism as a philosophy of the treatment of the world's problems. In the problem of communication now in this area of international tensions, we have three major problems stated for us, and I'd rather not go into them too extensively, but just name them. First of all, we have the problem of changing hostility and changing perceptions. Secondarily, the use of clinical, psychological, and psychiatric measures such as role-playing, sociodrama, psychodrama, and so forth in the change of perceptions and hostility. And finally, we have the problem in which we are doing some extensive research at the present time in the experimental analysis of the process of communication. In other words, what is going on right now? I'm not sure, and perhaps you are no more sure than I am, because at least we have some data on the relationship between the audience and the speaker, and what the speaker has in mind, what the audience has in mind, and so forth. Those are going on now on the fourth floor in one of these little experimental rooms that everybody talks a lot about, but very few people come in and see. In the area of application, we're doing this kind of research. First of all, one of our students, Virginia Van Veltzer, is doing a study on the Declaration of International Human Rights, of Universal Human Rights. She has administered the test in two ways to approximately 130 college students. You can see that I teach 130 students a semester. First of all, she administered the Universal Declaration without any title as a test called the I Believe That test. And the students were asked to put down, to agree or disagree or abstain, question any of the statements that were on this Declaration of Universal Human Rights. We found as many as, there were 200 statements on the question, there were 200 statements on the questionnaire. We found as many as 137 disagreements with the Universal Human Rights. Largely some fellows in studying semantics, by the way, who found an awful lot of loopholes in it.